Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Listick, Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the worlds of politics and law you watch me cover on television every day into the world of theater, the arts, and music here on the WGN Radio podcast. And I have a really cool guest today because you should be familiar with him, but if you're not, the way I first met him, he won't remember, but you'll understand this is one of the great growing jazz artists, actors that's around. Say hi to Brian Eng, who joins us. Brian, I've known you longer than you know.
How you doing, Paul? That's funny.
I am good. Well, I'll tell you the connection. I mentioned it to you once in an email, but where we did meet once was at a little restaurant, gone now, called Mortar and Pestle, where you used to play.
That's great. I really hold that time very fondly in my heart. So that's great.
I live around the corner from there. And so, I'm actually now forgetting like exactly where it was because I don't know what restaurant is there now. I think it might have been
not there.
The Mortar and Pestle is gone. Oh, no, wait a minute. I know where it was. It's at the corner of Barry and Broadway. And it is now a authentic Korean restaurant, which is also just going out of business. So it's time for you to open a restaurant.
I know. I guess I gotta bring the music back to that block. And
exactly. Now, at that time when you were doing that, you were a student at Northwestern, right? You weren't born here. I think you were born in Maryland and raised out there. But this was your home for quite a while.
Yes. Well, actually, I had just graduated from Northwestern, but that is what brought me out there. I grew up outside D.C., as you mentioned, in Maryland, and then I went to Northwestern, and then the pandemic started, and that's actually what brought me that opportunity was. All the performances were outside at that point. So I was literally playing outside on an actual street corner. And that was when they shut the whole street down. And they were just, we were bringing music and people were eating outside.
Yeah. Was that like a paid gig or you and your, I think it was your, with your girlfriend. I think you were doing it at the time. You guys would just show up and play.
Well, she was really just a great helper and she would help me carry this really heavy speaker from the dinosaur age, it felt like, because it was extremely heavy and we would lug it and be sweating to death by the time we got to set up. And then I started playing with a couple friends and it was not really a paid gig. We just played for tips and the owner of the restaurant, Steven, he was so kind. He would give us whatever we wanted off the menu. At the time I thought it was a good trade and it was a good trade. It was a great time. We a lot of great things came out of it and I got to play at a time when not a lot of people had gigs. So that was a great thing.
Yeah. And I think it was COVID that played tough for, I know Steven and it was tough for him to kind of make it work back then, but let's say hey, food is good. At least you got some free food out of it. I never got
we
that.
Loved it. We thought we were a little more, yeah.
And I think I tipped you. My memory is I'm sure I tipped you.
I'm sure you did.
And probably with my dogs walking
good
by.
Tips.
Exactly. So today I'm going to take you back a little bit so people learn a little bit about you. But, you know, today when I try and introduce you to me, it's all about jazz musician and singer and composer. It's all of that stuff. But, you know, as I look more about you and stuff, there's this whole actor thing you have going on. I mean, you've been in Law and Order. You can't be in Chicago and not be in Law and Order. But you've done Disney movies. I mean, you look kind of all over the place. So what is the career? Are you in your career goal world now? Which I think is the jazz music world.
I think that is a hard question for me to answer.
Well, and by the way, since I'm giving all, let me toss in Broadway too, because you were in Plaza Suite with Matthew Broderick, Sarah Jessica Parker, you know, how that gets fit into all of this. So quite the varied career.
It's this whole puzzle that I still feel like I'm putting together and maybe I'll have a solid answer when I'm ready to go someday. But you know, because it changes every day and it's a really turbulent career, especially at this age, trying to figure it out. I'm just kind of meeting with people all the time and trying to find a place for this multidimensional kind of mind that I have to just satisfy itself all the time. So like you said, I've done a lot of acting stuff and that's actually what I studied at Northwestern was acting. I didn't really
get
into
you had a double major there.
Yes, that's true. I did. And I studied music direction and acting. So I thought that I was going to strive to be an actor and on the side to pay the bills, accompany musical theater, you know, auditions and try and conduct on Broadway and play in the pits and stuff like that. That never ended up happening. And I kind of changed paths because of the pandemic. I got really, really into jazz music in a way that I never thought that I would go down that road. And my talents kind of lended themselves to that side of thing. And then I pretty soon was doing that to kind of pay my bills. And, started with that mortar and pestle gig and then went to a $50 gig and then a $100 gig and then so on and so forth. And now I get to play around the country and
Like
play.
Winter's Jazz Club here in Chicago, your next appearance, we'll toss that in, is December 13th at 7 and 9 p.m.
Exactly. Yeah. I love playing there. And Scott Stegman's been really great. He's been kind of watching me since I used to show up and listen to a lot of people that I looked up to. And he's always been kind. He'd get me in free and let me check him out. And
I
then
gotta hang with
recently,
you.
yeah, anytime, hey, you'll hang with me. Everyone can come
Free
hang.
food, shows. I mean, it's like walking around with you. It's like a gift, yeah.
So I'll be there again. And finally the offer came and I've been there a few times now. So that's kind of my new home in Chicago for jazz music.
You
But
also,
like
by the way, I'm just going to interrupt you time to time just to so I make sure we're covering everything. But you studied with some greats. One is a friend of mine. You work with Jeremy Kahn, and you also studied with Dr. Ryan Nelson, who I don't know, but some really fine talents.
Oh yeah, I mean Chicago. I love that city. They for so many reasons. For the people that you just named, for the way that the artists think there, and for the food. I mean, it's I guess there's a theme here, and it's always the food, and the artists and the way people think. I just love the people, and Chicago special, especially now spending so much time in New York. It's I see the way people think differently. And what draws people to different cities, but people like Jeremy and Ryan are incredible people. They really influenced who I became.
And for New York, we add in Emmett Cohn then, right?
That's right. And he's kind of been my he was a major mentor to me. He taught me everything I know, I like to say, on the piano and also about business. He really got me on my feet, and he's the one who told me to get that mortar and pestle gig. He said, "You just need hours." He's like, "You're not trying to make money right now. Just go and play and just learn what makes people happy and what attracts people's attention and just try and get better and play with people and create opportunities to do that." And he really taught me a lot.
So where do you rank either in enjoyment or in terms of what you think you're best at? What I mean is there's the piano, which you're playing all the time, but then you've got a fantastic voice. So there's the singing that comes in, and pull that all aside from the fact that you write your own music and compose and orchestrate and all of that. We'll talk about Stephen Colbert in a second, but yeah, is it, I mean, do you see it? Are you a singer who's a jazz musician? Are you a jazz musician who also sings?
I have a tough time calling myself a this or that, who does this or that, because it changes all the time. And it's kind of tricky trying to figure that out because right now I'm totally in the composing era and not even in the jazz style. I've just been working. I'm working on this new album. I don't know when we'll do it, but it's all these new compositions going back to my roots before jazz. And that's like Billy Joel and James Taylor and Carole King. And I have all these songs that nobody's heard yet that I just every day, I play gigs at night, but all day I work on these songs. And so that's a whole new side of things. I'm kind of just chasing whatever. And
But it's interesting that your first CD, I think we can still call them CDs, right? Was called 20, which I think you put out when you were 20. At least that's the connection I made to it. And so yes, there were some traditional jazz things in there, like Someone in Love, Shadow of Your Smile. But you also there's Bridge Over Troubled Waters. You go to the Simon and Garfunkel thing, and even I Just Can't Wait to Be King, Broadway. I think it's when I saw all the titles of that album, I thought, this is a man who's kind of searching for the right home, because there's all these great opportunities for you. And I still toss in Plaza Suite on Broadway. So it still feels like there's a Broadway part of you that calls.
totally. I mean, I think I went through a few years, the past few years, where I went so headstrong into jazz. And that was thanks to Emmett. And I'm grateful for that because I think that's the only way you really get better at something quickly is you got to go full in, not just with your time, but with your mind and fully consume my whole brain. And now I'm in the process of saying, I'm thankful for those years. And let's return to what my soul was and what my spirit was as a kid. And it was obsessed with Broadway and obsessed with musical theater. And I'm getting back to that. Even a lot of my songs, some people think sound kind of more musical theater. But it's all those influences. And 20 kind of is a great pull because it really demonstrates, even though, you know, I feel like I've come a long way since then musically, it still is my heart and soul. And yeah.
And then you get these opportunities. I mean, Plaza Suite, for example, right? Which comes to your lap, which is like, oh my, which is amazing. But I mentioned Stephen Colbert, and the fact that you worked on this million rich dollar person gala that he was putting on. But I got to get a quick story from you. How did that connection happen to the great Stephen Colbert? What a great connection to have, and I hope you still have it.
So that was a job that I never should have had, but I'm really grateful that I did. Somebody maybe messed up, but I was way over my head. Thankfully, I think I was ready for the moment, and I think they made the right mistake. But I ended up orchestrating this multi-million dollar. I was a sophomore in college at this time, and somebody ended up saying, "How about you just orchestrate this whole show?" And it was some 20-piece orchestra or something in that number. And it was all these celebrities. Stephen Colbert was hosting it, and it was this huge gala. And I mean, I was so naive at the time too, which I'm grateful for, because I just was like, "Of course I can do it." And I did
I can
do
do
it.
anything.
I did. And I was so glad. I mean, I stayed up. It was like I didn't get the charts until very late in the game. And I had like 2 days to orchestrate all of these numbers. I just remember I was like in school, skipping all my homework assignments, just being like, I have to do this, wasn't sleeping. And I remember it was probably one of my first panic attacks I've had. And I was just like, but it turned out it was a hit. And, I love that. I love that time. Man, that was great.
And the performance thing, and of course you also spend time, maybe this is where the performance part of you comes from, because you were at Marriott Lincolnshire here and Looking Glass and Drury Lane. You were in Forever Plaid. I think I saw you in Forever Plaid. So it's that constant pull, the music, the stage. It's not as though they don't go together.
Yeah. Fortunately, it's I do like, you know, people like to say, "Well, do you feel like you're this or that?" I think it's I'm an artist most first and foremost, and I see them all together. They're just ways of expressing, you know, this experience and connecting and bringing people together, and that's all it is to me.
One of your New York gigs, I have not been to your gig in New York, but I used to go there, number one, to see Eartha Kitt, and number two, to see a woman who became a good friend of mine, Kay Ballard, who also performed. And the room I'm talking about is the Carlyle, where you are, if I have it right, the youngest person ever to sign as an in-residence performer in that space. What a historic, and I just mentioned Eartha Kitt and Kay Ballard because I'm guessing you knew they performed there, but I just want you to know the kind of, in my view, the greatness that shared a stage for you prior to you getting there.
No, absolutely. The list goes on and on. And another good quick story about how my naivete led me to great things is just I did not know the importance of that room. I just remember when I got to New York, Plaza Suite ended. I didn't have any money coming in, and I needed to do something. So I was literally going door to door in person at that time, trying to get. And I was just like, "Just let me play the piano anywhere, please."
Like a restaurant, whatever.
And I did a lot of that. I played at a bunch of restaurants, and then I was hitting up this gig because someone told me this was the gig to get, you know. And I hit them up, and no response, no response. I followed up for months and months, almost a year, I think. And finally, they said, "You know, we're holding auditions." It ended up just being me that they were auditioning, but I went and auditioned, and they said, "You got it." And they said, and it wasn't, so we just passed our year mark 6 months ago. So I guess we're a year and a half now. And I recalled that story because if I had known what that room really meant, I definitely wouldn't. I would have been like, "Oh, they don't want me. Of course they don't want me." But I just was like, "Of course they want me." And I just kept going, and I was like, "I'm doing this for you," I thought in my head. And finally they let me in, and then I met all these great people and learned about the history of the room and Bobby Short and all of these things. And
Yeah.
was like, "This is great. This is great. Where I'm meant to be."
There used to be a club here before your time. It was called George's, although had you ever heard of it?
No.
In Chicago. Well, it's a place called George's where I saw people perform like Sarah Vaughan and Phyllis Hyman. If you're familiar, if you're not familiar with Phyllis Hyman's work, listen to it. Such as her song "Living All Alone." She committed suicide some years back and stuff. But anyway, George's was this very intimate place where you were just so close to the artist. It's a Carlyle Room kind of a thing, only perhaps maybe darker in its mode. But check that out when you get a chance. It's gone now, but it was sort of an amazing place. Look up Phyllis Hyman because you will love her work. That being said, a strong influence on you, I know, and it makes sense, is Nat King Cole, who of course has a lot of Chicago roots as well. What is it about Nat King? You're a young guy. What is it about Nat King Cole that appeals to you so strongly?
Well, wow. Yes, you're right. Nat King Cole's a huge influence on me.
Were you 50 when you were 10? I kind of
maybe,
was.
Maybe. I don't think I was 50 when I was 10, but maybe when I was 15, 16 was when I started really discovering all these older sounds. And Nat King Cole was amongst them, at first as a vocalist, naturally.
Yeah.
And then Emmett really helped me to understand that not only was he a vocalist and pianist, he was one of the greatest, most influential pianists who has ever lived and talked about and played this music. And a lot of people don't. And that really got me interested in Nat King Cole, because obviously I play the piano and sing. So that's kind of why I really love him. He really changed the course of jazz piano as we know it, and anyone who's in the genre really understands that.
An amazing talent, as was his daughter, or is his daughter, of course.
Yes.
As well. But you talk about playing the piano and all that, and yet I know, if I'm misquoting you, you correct me, but you actually have recently found that the guitar is sexier than the piano.
So you're referencing an Instagram post that I made yesterday where I've been learning the guitar for the past couple of months now, and I just love toys. These are just toys. You know,
expensive toys.
Yeah, I guess so. The guitar is much more affordable though than the piano. Mm-hmm. But it's, as I mentioned, kind of starting to write a lot of stuff that's on my heart and my mind, like Billy Joel inspired and Carole King and James Taylor. It naturally leads you to the guitar, where it's just yet another way to express myself and seems like the perfect vehicle for the things that I've been writing lately.
What about horn? I've always been a trumpet fan. I was so stupid. Back when I was in grade school, I don't know if this was true for you, but when we were in grade school, you had to kind of pick an instrument, right? And then learn to play it. And I picked the alto sax, which was bigger than me at the time. And of course, I gave it up after a period of years. I do play piano myself, but I wish I had learned trumpet. That's the one thing, because I could have managed it, whatever. And I love the sound of trumpet. Recently, saw Herb Alpert and anyway, some great trumpeters. Louis Armstrong, huge Louis Armstrong fan. That's got to come into your repertoire at some point, I would think.
Well, it's certainly my favorite horn to play with. I love instruments. I wish I could learn them all. The problem is, if you do that, you just get not that good at all of them. And so, I mean, if I were to learn another instrument, I would really want to learn the clarinet or the trumpet. The trumpet, I really do. A lot of my favorite mentors, one of my great mentors is Bruce Harris, who's a great trumpeter here in New York and around the world. But I've always loved the trumpet. And it is, I would say, if I had to guess, I think that's probably the hardest instrument to play, though. It's unbelievable the way it beats up your lips, and it is really difficult to even just produce a good sound.
Maybe it was smart that I didn't do that. You bring in some of these different flavors, the Nat King Cole flavor. This past March, you had a new CD come out. Little Nat King Cole in there, Unforgettable. But you also have some original music on that. So that's kind of Brian Eng, sort of now we're starting to see your work as it emerges on your label, on your CDs, right? And we're going to see more of that, I assume.
When you're 23, life is held in his hands. A breeze could blow you either way. You've got a fact, your future proved a promising past. Well, that's what the old people say. When you're 23, you don't want to grow up to find your way, become the rest. But your childhood's over, all memories have passed. You've been kicked out of the nest. And as you're tumbling toward this trap, see a chick falling, floating near you. So you grab her hand just to slow your own fall, and you start to feel something new. When you're 23, now reluctantly grown, you try not to follow the fold. But you've learned to fly with that chick floating by. You both look for the growing oak.
The tricky thing about being an artist sometimes is you want to honor your influences, but you also want to start to develop your own name for your own music if you are a composer. And it's sometimes tricky because Nat King Cole can often get people in the door to listen to your music or buy a ticket, and then you kind of want to win them over with your music. So this album was kind of an attempt to start moving in that direction. Like you said, it's six standards and then four of my originals, and all the originals on that one are still in the jazz genre, and they kind of fall into that Great American Songbook sound. A little Nat King Cole, a little Cole Porter, a little, you know, and then my own song. So I'm very excited and proud of that album. It's the first trio album that I did. It's only trio. We just went into the studio, recorded it live, and versus my first album, 20, which was a huge orchestra with strings, a whole big band that I arranged. So it's a little different, and I like the difference in concepts.
Doing the work that you do in trying to sort of pick the sounds that you pick, what is it? Does the artist matter to you? Like it was Nat King Cole, or I say Louis Armstrong, or is it the sound of what they did? In other words, you could listen to a song, if I didn't tell you and you didn't know who had originally recorded it, can you say, no, I can grow to love that song. It doesn't matter to me who did it. It's about the music.
Yes. I mean, especially in the jazz genre, and this is something that's starting to get lost a little bit more, but it was the songwriters at the time who I think were the real stars, because, you know, Cole Porter is the best example. He would write a song and then all the great talents would put their own spin on it and record it.
You recorded some, at least on Instagram, you got some Cole Porter stuff.
Yes, actually on my last album, I think we have at least one in The Still of the Night. But Cole Porter,
yes, you do.
I think my favorite composer, probably most, if you ask most jazz artists, he's probably their favorite Great American Songbook composer. But that's like the core of the music is the songwriting. That's kind of why I'm getting so into it too, is the melody and the chord changes and the rhythm. And that's what they came up with. And then that's the roadmap for us to then put our own spin on it. So I just love the songs.
On the personal end, is your family, are they still in Maryland?
They are, yes.
So do they say, go, Brian, go, you got it? Or is it like, Brian, law school, it's there's still time?
No, they fortunately, I'm some years past that stage. Although I certainly went through that time of, I mean, that's kind of why I went to Northwestern in the first place. It was a little bit of it's a fantastic school. I'm lucky I got in, but it was a little bit of a negotiation at the time because they're known as a great school. And then I would get a degree from Northwestern. And when I started there, I was an econ double major with theater only for a week. I mean, it was pretty sick that I was like, this is not happening. But since then, you know, I don't come from a world of connections or my parents being in the industry or anything. So they were smart enough to know that as talented as they thought I was, they needed to hear from some experts, some people who have seen it and known it. And as I got the approval of people who they thought, you know, had made a career in it and stuff like that, little by little, they started to ease their foot off. And now they're just totally, totally happy and supportive of my career. And they have great ideas too, you know.
New York isn't that far from Maryland, so they can obviously get there. I assume they've seen you at the Carlisle, they've seen you at certain some of these gigs. They must just where I come from. I grew up in Skokie. We call it cavelling with pride.
Yeah, they come up and they see me, and I've been going back about once a month. That's been my New Year's resolution that I've mostly kept to, but I'll be going back this upcoming week. It's so easy to get down and up. I have no excuse. In Chicago, it was a little harder, but now I can take a bus, I can take a train, I can take a plane, I can take a rental car, and I've done all of them. And right. it's just so easy. And as I'm
just
getting,
carry that amp with you on your way.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I travel light too. but it's just important to me too. And all of this new album I'm working on that you may see in the future, it's so personal to me. It's all about my upbringing, my family, the challenges that I'm going through at the moment. And so my seeing them as much as possible is a big, important part of this journey.
When people go to your website, and they will, brianeng.com, There are times you work with, now here's where your mastery of music surpasses mine, so I'm sort of curious. There's the Brian Eng trio, and there's the Brian Eng sextet. And what is it? I mean, so when there's six, when there's three, when there is sort of like, well, it depends who's around, or is it like, no, there are shows that need to be the, because I think when you play here in Chicago at Winners Jazz Club, I'm pretty sure it's a trio that you use here. What determines whether it's three, six, or maybe other numbers in between?
Well, this is just yet another example of kind of me chasing my mind and just wanting to create what I see. And they're outlets for me. The Brian Eng Trio is myself on piano. All of them are me on piano and vocals.
Right.
The Brian Eng Trio was formed in Chicago and features two of my buddies who still live in Chicago. So, and I love these guys, Stephen Parisi and TJ Thompson. And on that
will they group, be with you at Winters in December?
Well, you know, and that group, it's just wild. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's showmanship. We play a lot of jazz music, but they're always interested in playing my new stuff. So we experiment a lot with that group. With the Brian Eng Circle Room Trio, it's another trio, but that one is, instead of bass and drums, it's bass and guitar. And this is an homage to the Nat King Cole Trio, which was a drumless trio that he formed in Los Angeles.
So very consciously put together.
Very consciously. And it's called the Circle Room Trio because of the Nat King Cole Live at the Circle Room album, which was very influential on me. So that group, we play It's Only a Paper Moon, Straighten Up and Fly Right, Orange Colored Sky, very Nat King Cole focused. The sextet is kind of just my attempt to get back at that big band sound. It's not quite the size of a big band, but we get three horns in the mix in addition to bass and drums and myself. So with that, I get to get a little bit more of a brassier sound, maybe more energized. I get to stand up a little bit and ditch the piano for a few numbers. But now I'm even thinking about a new group where where I get to kind of, you know, maybe do a more of a rock Billy Joel kind of energy where I have a guitarist, me on piano, maybe electric bass and drums. And, you know, the possibilities are endless. And that's kind of what's exciting.
It sounds like you flirt a little bit, and I can see you doing this, but the big band sound, the Glenn Miller, Count Basie specifically, Duke Ellington, who I met once when I was a kid. I was, it doesn't matter anyway. I pushed a friend into him and he just grunted. what about that world? I mean, because, you know, the more people that are on stage with you, it's Brian Eng takes over the orchestra, but, you know, it's very different from watching you at the piano and you and two others, and then you and the Count Basie orchestra with you.
Well, first of all, the Count Basie Orchestra is the pinnacle to me right now. I got to see them this summer when we played at the Elkhart Jazz Fest and they were headlining, and it was one of the greatest musical experiences of my life because I am obsessed with that sound. Before I got into the technicality and the advanced harmonies of jazz piano, I just loved listening to Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole sing with a big orchestra. And honestly, one of my favorite songs of all time is Harry James, It's Been a Long, Long Time. And that's a very popular song that just makes me feel good. And that's what I like about the big band. It's warm, makes you feel good. It energizes you at the right moments. It's not about how advanced or whatever it is. It's just a good feeling. And it's spoken to me for whatever reason.
I get the feeling if I were to say, where's Brian Eng in 5 years? I don't mean where, you'll be in New York or someplace like that. But if I say to you, what kind of music are you producing? Not sure you can answer that today.
I have no idea. People say they reinvent themselves every 7 years, but for me, it feels like every four or five. And I'm in the process right now of moving into this new genre. And so I really don't know.
I know a song that's important to you is Shadows in the Rain.
Yeah.
What is it about that song that you love so much?
Well, that song, it's funny because that song is a Sting song, but the song that I wrote is called Shadows in the Rain. So it's my song that's Shadows in the Rain.
Okay.
And well, that's just kind of one of these new songs that I wrote that is really a personal journal entry. It's about a past love of mine, and it's just kind of a taste. So if you guys check that out on Instagram, because it's not recorded, it's a little taste of what I've been working on, and that's very Carole King inspired.
Yeah, and you've recorded some. I mean, we love Carole King. She's amazing. Yes. As well. Is the stage in your future, by the way? I mean, might I come to New York and there you are in Water for Elephants or something, something like that?
That's a possibility. I've gotten a little bit, as the music thing has really consumed my heart and my soul, and also been financially able to help me, stay here and do my thing. I've gotten a little pickier about the projects that I take on, but I am anxious to get back on screen or on stage, and hopefully we'll see that in the near future.
Will we see you reprise the role of Winston?
I don't know if there's going to be a sequel of that movie.
Where did that come from? That, by the way, was that people don't know what I'm talking about. That was a Disney original called Christmas Again. How did that happen? That seems so off the
It
center.
was funny. That was in the midst of the pandemic. That was one of the first things that shot. And it was one of those things where if you weren't saying a line, well, as soon as they yelled cut, the COVID people would come in and put this mask over your double mask you and a shield. And that's how we existed. But that was just a funny role, a little funny Christmas movie, very much like Groundhog Day, where somebody's day repeats over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's just your even your acting. You've got some serious roles. I kind of looked through your reel and just really a really. Well, you're an incredibly. It's why I sort of wanted to really do this interview because you are sort of in so many different places, and I have lots of interests. And I have people saying to me, "Why don't you just focus?" The answer is no. You have to go with your passion, and if that passion covers a range of things, then so be it. It does. As I said before, we lose our time. You'll be back here in Chicago at Winners Jazz Club. People can actually check that out through your website or the Winners Jazz Club website. And it's a great place to play. You play at 7 to 9, so are they like hour and a half gigs? How long do they go?
I think there's two shows. One's at 7 and 9, and they're both 75 minutes.
Okay.
We'll be doing a lot of Christmas music and standards and a lot of taste of what's to come too. So yeah.
And when you're here, it's kind of like your home, right?
I love it. There's no place I'd rather perform than Chicago.
All right, Brian Ng, congratulations on this amazing career. Let's touch base in 5 years. Can we do that? Do this again?
You will.
All right, see what's going on. Check him out. Winners Jazz Club, December 13th. Go to brianeng.com. You get all the information there. Get his CDs. Check out the music, Spotify, if you want to. But you're doing great stuff. I'm really just really impressed with you. I since our days at Murder and Pestle, me tipping you. Congratulations on all of that.
Thanks so much, Paul.
All
Pleasure
right.
talking.